Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
What are you guys feeling for dinner? Steak? Pasta? How about unfeatured articles?
Hello and welcome to Unfeatured Articles, everybody's favorite podcast where we delve into the deep recesses of Wikipedia and find comedic gold, juicy, juicy comedic gold. My name is Curtis Lang and I am joined as I am every week by my wonderful co-hosts and very dear friends, Mr. Riley McNamara.
Hello.
And Mr. James Kehoe.
Howdy.
How are you, boys?
Very well.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I'm doing exceptionally well. You want to know why?
Tell me.
Because while you two were still struggling to get here, I got about a 25-minute massage from our producer, Zane Weber.
What does this man not do?
I know. It's ridiculous. It was one of the best massages I've ever had.
He's a human multi-tool.
Yeah.
Does this mean you're going to be too chill?
I am feeling so relaxed.
Just the podcast is going to go for like an extra 5 minutes of just you slurring. Yeah. Just like... And
my article is this. It's like Dory speaking whale in Finding Nemo. Thank you.
Oh, my word. Well,
should we get stuck into it?
Let's.
Who's going to go for
old man noise? I think I need a massage. I was just like, here we go.
You're getting one after this, aren't you?
Back into it. Want to. I was going to say I should be, which is very rude. Which is a very rude.
I demand.
Please.
I'll have the butler cook you up a steak as well, sir. Who's going to go first this week, lads?
Ross? We probably should have worked that out, shouldn't we?
Yeah. We usually do, but we forgot to. Yeah. You're going first,
mate.
Riley. So, boys, this week I'm going to talk about... Now, there have been a lot of wars. In the time. There's been... some big wars, some world wars, if you will.
I've heard of them.
A Cold War.
Cold War.
There was a cold one.
Yeah, not very a lot chilly, happened, but yeah. Then also a lot happened.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it was something like that.
Yeah, something.
Have we heard of the Bone Wars?
No.
The Bone Wars, ladies and gentlemen, and boys. The Bone Wars was...
You're like 2 months older than me. Calm down.
I think it's a year and 2 months.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
How old are you?
Old.
Oh, okay. That gives me clarity. Thank you, Rob. Bone Wars?
Bone Wars, also known as the Great Dinosaur Rush, was a period of intense and ruthlessly competitive fossil hunting and discovery during the Gilded Age of American history, marked by a heated rivalry between Edward Drinker Cope of the Academy of Natural Science. Edward Drinker Cope.
Okay, because Dinker is a bad middle name.
Bad.
It's the one big last name, right? Drinker Cope.
Edward Drinker Cope.
Drinker Cope.
I would like to think that Drinker was just a very poor excuse for a nickname. He was just like, oh, guys, look at me. I'm drinking all these things. He's like, oh, fuck, you're bloody drinker.
What did you try and get people to call you in high school, James?
That would be Spoons.
How are we circled back to this?
It's okay, all right. I didn't have a nickname, and I was like, I want a cool nickname. And then I was like...
What's a cool nickname?
You know, like Spoons. The cool nickname Spoons that is cool.
I imagine that's what Edward Cope was thinking.
Probably.
When he assigned himself the nickname of Drinker.
Can we refer to James exclusively as Spoons this
please
episode?
Please do. Let it catch on.
Shut up, Spoons.
They're up.
Yeah!
I hate everything.
Drinking like he was... Mr. Edward was just like, oh, yeah, I drink to cope. And like people were like, drink a cope. All right.
Yeah. Fuck. If he didn't before, he does after that.
Yeah. Oh, man, you know what? That's just another classic Spoons comedy gag.
It's a Spoons zinger.
Spoonsy zinger. All right.
Please tell me more.
Spoonerism, if you will.
Oh. How crazy is it that this thing... Yeah, I'm going to just slide past that. How crazy is it that this thing like has the name Bone Wars? And you're like, oh, that's so cool. Tell me more. And you're like, yeah. It's also known as the Great Dinosaur Rush. And it's like, that's equally cool, but I know nothing else. Like, I don't know anything more about
this. It's
giving
me no more context.
No,
I told you a little bit. It's a period of intense and ruthlessly competitive fossil hunting in the Gilded Ages of American history.
Of course.
Yeah, rivalry between Edward Drinker Cope of the Academy of Natural Science in Philadelphia and Othniel Charles Marsh of the Peabody Museum of Natural History at Yale.
Sure.
So a bloke from Philly... up against a bloke from Yale.
All right.
Like,
duke it
already
out.
Seems a bit lopsided.
Yeah.
So two paleontologists use very underhanded methods to try and outdo each other in, like, this period.
Both of them have exceptional facial hair.
They
incredible.
Do. They do.
But, like, the opposite facial hair.
Yeah.
One's got, like...
One's got all chin, the other's got no chin.
Yeah, and just a big, bushy mustache.
Yeah.
Bald.
I would have either. I'd go either.
Yeah. I'd have anything. I can't grow any facial
yeah,
hair.
Yeah, like
very upsetting.
Any facial hair.
James and I are. We're baby-faced boys.
Boop, boop.
One day, boys. One day.
One day. We grow up to be big and strong like Dad.
Yeah.
Riley McNamara. Tell me more about these underhanded... These...
So they resorted to bribery. They resorted to theft. And they went as far as actually destroying the fossils that the other had found.
No way. That's a bad like, paleontologist.
Yeah, like fucking these two dudes who are like professors of paleontology... were so mad at each other that they went as far as breaking dinosaur bones to fucking
jeez.
Piss the other one off.
That's hilarious.
It's mental. So their search for fossils went between bone beds in Colorado, Nebraska, and Wyoming from about 1877 to 1892. So it was a period of, you know, like 15 years where it was going off for these boys.
Yeah.
They used their wealth and influence to finance their own expeditions and procure services and stuff. So it all started, they were actually friends back in the day. They met in Berlin in 1864 and spent quite a few days together. They named, like, they discovered bones and named species after one another.
Oh my
like,
gosh.
They, that were, that was the level they were on. They were
these
like,
guys are so
tight. Found this dinosaur. I got it. I know a boy named Othniel. Let's call it that.
I'm going to name it after my best friend.
Drinker.
Drink Coper. Drinker Cope.
So over time, like they, as some relationships do, they over time soured a bit.
So they were mates.
They were pals. I don't know if they were mates, but they were pals.
They were yeah. amicable.
The internet says amicable. Read into that what you will.
Well, they named
they
species.
Were doing it. They
I wouldn't
were doing
name
it.
A species after you, Curtis. Like,
aww. I would. Name one after you.
I thought you were going to be like, I would name one after me.
Like, I would. I'd do that too,
yeah.
To be honest.
I'm hurt. I'm just saying. If I found a species.
I'm glad that Liz Keogh's coming in two episodes because you're swiftly becoming my least favorite Keogh.
Fair. Look, fair.
All right.
Don't want to screw up the timeline too
yeah,
much.
Yeah.
So yeah, they part of the reason that they became less friendly with each other is because they both had very strong personalities. Cope was known to be pugnacious and possessed a quick temper. Marsh was slower, but more methodical and introverted. So
it's
I imagine
like
he was like
Mythbusters host.
Yeah, pretty much.
Huh.
They hate each other now, apparently. both were quarrelsome and distrustful. Difference also extended to the scientific realm. Cope, a boy drinker, was a firm supporter of neo-Lamarckism. Which God. Is not a word I've ever read before.
You said boy drinker and then a firm supporter of neo. And then paused a little bit too long, and I got really concerned. But then I did remember that it was in like the 1800s, so yeah. Neo-Nazism wasn't really a thing.
It's like an alternative.
Pre-Nazism?
Ooh.
Well, just being a dick?
Yeah.
Yeah, just being
a bit of an asshole. And Marsh supported Darwin's theory of evolution by natural selection. So there was that kind of like tension between them, I guess.
Mm.
As one observer put it, the patrician Edward may have considered Marsh not quite a gentleman, and the academic Othniel probably regarded Cope as not quite a professional.
Oh,
that's as scathing as it got back in the 1870s, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just gonna butt in real quick and just explain neo-Larkism versus Charles Darwinism.
Lamarckism
is the hypothesis that an I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to explain it?
Is the hypothesis that an organism can pass on characteristics it has acquired during its lifetime to its offspring.
So yeah, it's like a alternative to Darwin's theory.
Yeah, whereas they evolved throughout a process of like different creatures. So I guess it would be if I could, the best way to explain it is like
if...
Like, if I went to the gym and got super muscly, then I had kids. My kids would be muscly.
Right. It would predisposition to be, like, quite muscly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we all know that doesn't really work.
Right. No.
Sorry, off Neil.
Yeah. My dad's quite muscly, and I am...
You're taller than your dad.
I'm taller than my dad.
There you go.
But I'm chubby.
such a pitying silence where no one rushed to my defense.
Ah, oh, fuck. All right. It's all right, guys.
That was a cry for help. I'm having body confidence issues.
We right. love you. We love you.
Love you. I'll name a species after you now. Thanks, James. It's fine.
Thank you.
Tell me more about the Bone Wars, please.
Yeah, so they were both, not only did they have different like scientific views, they both grew up in very different backgrounds. Drinker Cope was born into a wealthy and influential Quaker family in Philadelphia. So like he had a lot of money behind him from the get-go. It was like pretty easy for him.
Sure.
Where's the other one? Apparently we've only got Cope's backstory.
Cope, yeah.
In contrast, Marsh would have grown up poor, the son of a struggling family in Lockport, New York.
Right.
Had it not been for his benefaction of his uncle, who was a philanthropist, Marsh persuaded his uncle to build the Peabody Museum of Natural History, his uncle being the aforementioned George Peabody, placing Marsh as the head of the museum. Yeah. So, you know, it's the fucking, you know, just have your dad be rich and then...
Yeah, so Drinker Cope
had family wealth.
Yeah.
Whereas, and Marsh didn't.
Yeah, Marsh established it, though.
Yeah, it says further up the article that Cope and Marsh were financially and socially ruined by their attempts to compete and disgrace each other.
Yeah,
so that means...
They went ham.
Yeah, yeah. Drinker Cope just wasted away his family's money. Marsh made a shit ton of money and then lost it all.
Pissed it all off.
Which would you rather do? Waste all your family's money or make your own money and waste it all?
My family's money.
Yeah.
It's easier.
My dad still likes me, I think, so... I don't think. I know my dad. I like you and you like me. I know that for a fact.
Jesus Christ. I like my dad. He's a good man. Diamond Stuart Lane.
Good dude.
Yeah.
So their early expeditions. Let's tiny little bit more on their background. Two scientists had gone on, they went on an expedition to one of Cope's pits in New Jersey where he was, you know, digging stuff up. Where William Fulke, there's going to be a lot of names in this one, discovered the holotype specimen of Hadrosaurus Fulke.
What's a Hadrosaurus?
It's a dinosaur, Curtis.
Nice. Got him. You're just saying a bunch of words into a microphone. Explain your words.
A Hadrosaurus is a dinosaur. It's a valid genus of Hadrosaurid dinosaur that lived in North America during the late Cretaceous period. I've said more words. Is that better?
It kind of looks like a small T-Rex.
Yeah, with a beak, though.
With a more of a beak kind of thing, yeah.
Is that just your reference point for all dinosaurs?
No.
This one is a big T-Rex. This one's a four-legged T-Rex.
T-Rex, but this one's got some spikes and...
No.
So no. this is kind of where it started.
Stop being mean to me. I've got confidence issues.
So they went to Cope's Pits in New Jersey where someone found a dinosaur bone. It was one of the first American finds, and the pits... that they had access to were very, very rich with fossil. They dug up a heap. They parted amicably, but Marsh bribed the pit owners, the pit operators, to divert any future fossil finds to him instead of going to Cope.
No.
They began attacking each other in papers and publications, and their personal relationships deteriorated.
Dang.
Marsh humiliated Cope, pointing out that his reconstruction of a pliosaur, being an aquatic dinosaur, like one of those long-necked ones.
Yeah.
He put the head on the tail and thusly was ridiculed in scientific papers.
Gosh, they're like Hamilton and Burr, these.
Yeah,
I love it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Write the Bone
what
Wars
a fucking
musical.
This is actually
musical
like
this would
such
be.
A good story.
Let's do it.
Lin-Manuel,
no, bugger
Lin-Manuel
off.
Miranda, don't do it. I'm going to...
We're gonna, three white men, we're going to write the next rap musical.
Easy.
Yep.
Maybe we can make it.
It doesn't have to be rap. Like
maybe we can make it punk rock.
We can just write a musical, or a play.
It's 2018, dude. You got to find a niche.
It's all dinosaur noises.
That's it. Yeah. So Cope put the head on the wrong end of the dinosaur because he's a bit of a fool. Maybe got a bit excited. Was just trying to rush to get the project finished. And then Cope began collecting what Marsh considered his private bone hunting turf. Like, this is like full on gang territory stuff. Like, basically, Cope went into Marsh's territory and started like digging up bones there.
Do you know Marsh was the bloke who discovered the Stegosaurus.
The Stegosaurus, Allosaurus, the Apatosaurus. There's a whole bunch that he discovered.
Put together. Hypothesized.
This is a very wordy article, so I'm...
Yes, it's a big article. You've done it. It's very bold.
I've skipped down the bottom where I see that there's actually an episode of Drunk History that has a part of it that is the Bone Wars.
That's cool.
Definitely should be checking out that one.
Yeah. The early expeditions that were going on, directed in the American West because of the richness of large fossils. I'm going to skip most of this because it's all kind of just like...
It's all just beef.
Exposition.
Yeah, it's all just like...
They didn't like each other.
And then Marsh did this.
They had a couple of guys each. So like a couple of lieutenants, I guess, if you will. One of them sent a letter to another one. Just like the way they write, it's very like old-worldly. But they throw some... They throw some fire.
It's Hamilton and Burr.
I asked him not to go into that field that you were going there. He laughed at the idea of being restricted to any locality and said he intended to go whether I aided him or not. I was anxious to secure the cooperation of such a worker as an honor to my corps. I could not be responsible for the field he selected, and as much as I pay him no salary and portion of his expenses, you will therefore see that this is not a pleasant thing to work in competition with others. It almost seems a necessity. And then it just finishes, you can sympathize. doesn't give him an option, just you will. Some of the dinosaurs, let's jump to what he did find.
Can you jump to about Cope's death?
Yeah, that's the bottom. This is
it's
intense.
Really funny. Go for Cope's final challenge before his death. I would read it, but it's yours.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so Cope issued a final challenge before his death. I'm just trying to find it.
Cope's final challenge. Yeah, all right. So it's Cope issued a final challenge. So I've heard.
He had his skull donated to science so that his brain could be measured, hoping that his brain would be larger than that of his adversary. at the time, brain size was believed to be a measure of intelligence.
Yeah, that's right.
Marsh never accepted the challenge, and Cope's skull is reportedly still preserved at the University of Pennsylvania. So that's like the ultimate... dick measuring contest.
You mentioned you were trying to see what kind of dinosaurs Marsh and Cope were like responsible for like kind of rediscovering or like hypothesizing the existence of.
Mm. Yeah.
And they talk about Triceratops, Allosaurus.
Yeah.
Which okay, I don't
Allosaurus that, is, no, that, is that is a baby T-Rex.
That is a small version of a T-Rex.
That's a baby T-Rex.
Diplodocus, which is the massive long one that you see at the beginning, like big Jurassic Park where they're like welcome to Jurassic Park. The Stegosaurus.
They had a history of like butchering maybe butchering's the wrong word, but like they assembled a lot of skeletons wrong. Like they put the wrong head on something. It's gone. They did a lot of underhanded stuff. Like they would frequently like tear each other down in scientific papers and stuff like that. Like actual published journal articles.
Damn.
They would just like rip shreds off each other.
And everyone hated them by the time died. They were we're sick of your shit.
Yeah, and like all the scientific community, because like this thing generated quite a hubbub. Like it started off pretty low key, but it went to like front page of all the newspapers at the time and everything.
Mm.
Particularly when they were doing shit like destroying bones and stuff like that.
They also discovered I'm going to try and pronounce this, the coelophysis, which looks kind of like a velociraptor,
like a baby T-Rex.
No, like a velociraptor. Its skull looks freaking scary. It looks like it'd rip your head off.
Probably would.
Nice.
Anyway, Bone Wars.
Bone Wars, yeah. So, yeah, they became front page news and all the scientific community was like, are you serious? These fucking idiots.
These guys.
These fucking idiots ruining fossils and you put them up here? We're doing actually important stuff.
Yeah. I enjoy that this whole snafu has resulted in the sentence, Cope, who at the early 1880s had more bones than he could fit in a single house, had fallen behind in the race for dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Like that being a sentence.
That's a tagline for a movie.
Yeah. It finished with, I can't remember which one of them. I'm just trying to find it now. One of them, at the end of all the race, had 52 bones and the other one had 80.
Dang.
Oof.
Here we go. Yeah. Cope discovered, 56. Not even bones. I've completely like pulled this down. Both scientists made finds of immense scientific value, but while Cope discovered a total of 56 species, He coined 56 fucking dinosaur species.
Yeah, oh,
Marsh discovered 80. Marsh discovered 80.
Crazy. That's insane. They were big boys.
They were big boys. So yeah, Marsh, congratulations, Marsh, the victor of the Bone War.
She won. He won. What did I say?
Marsh is the dude with the chin beard.
The chin beard.
And Drinker Cope was the dude with the mustache.
Yeah.
Nice.
The moustache.
Be good.
Well.
Bone Wars.
Listen out for the unfeatured articles, punk rock musical coming out about the Bone Wars.
Very excited.
In the next 5 years or so.
Can I do mine?
Yes.
Or do you want to do yours?
I went I can't remember who went last time.
You
can go.
Yeah.
You went last. I can't remember. No, James, go.
All right.
I'm going to eat brownie.
You went last at some point, so.
At some point.
Yeah, so therefore.
Okay, once again, we recorded a future episode before this one, and we keep fucking up the timeline. It was ruined as soon as you mentioned brownies. Look out for brownies in 2 episodes' time. Thank you, Liz Kehoe, for bringing brownies.
It's an Easter egg.
Jeez. You can hear her laughing in the background.
Guys, up, Liz.
All right. Guys, I don't want to talk about too much, you know. All I want to talk about today is one red paperclip.
Okay.
I want to talk about one red paperclip. This now, started as a website created by Canadian blogger Carl McDonald, who bartered his way from a single red paperclip to a house in a series of 14 online trades over the course of a year. McDonald was inspired by the childhood game Bigger Better. His site received a considerable amount of notice for tracking the transaction. He says, a lot of people have been asking how I've stirred up so much publicity around the project, and my simple answer is I have no idea. So this is a guy who started out with a red paperclip and ended up with his own house.
I've heard of this guy. This is really interesting. Oh, it's got a list of the transactions.
Yeah. So King of Trades, Kyle McDonald. Let's go through it. So he made his first trade, a red paperclip for a fish-shaped pen. That was 2005, July 14th. He reached his goal of trading up to a house with the 14th transaction. So we're only at like 14 transactions to get to a house.
He got from a paper... And
let's go through it. So
he did it in less than a year as well.
Yeah, right?
Just less than a year.
Like almost 1 year exactly. So July 14th, went to Vancouver, traded the paperclip for a fish-shaped pen. Traded the pen the same day for a hand-sculpted doorknob from Seattle. July 25th, traveled to Amherst, Massachusetts with a friend to trade the doorknob for a Coleman camp stove.
With fuel,
in parentheses. September 24th, goes to California, trades the camp stove for a Honda generator.
Jesus, moving around a bit.
Yeah, he's probably spending more moving from place to place than he is like for the actual value of the items.
It's a good meme, though.
November 16th, goes to Maspeth, Queens, trades the generator for an instant party, which is an empty keg, an IOU for filling the keg with beer of the bearer's choice, and a neon Budweiser sign. Now, he tried to trade the generator before, but it got apprehended by the fire department of New York. So, second attempt, got himself an instant party. December 8th, he trades this instant party to Quebec comedian and radio personality Michelle Barrette for a Ski-Doo snowmobile. Gets a snowmobile from an instant party, which is kind of a weird trade. Because, like, there's no beer in the keg, right?
There's an IOU for some beer.
Well,
they get a fillet.
Meh. Gets a snowmobile. Within a week, he trades it away for a two-person trip to Yark, British Columbia, scheduled for February 2006. Around January 7th, 2006, trades the second spot on the trip for a box truck.
So he didn't even trade both.
No.
He just traded one.
He probably
this
got
dude
a trip.
Knows how to trade.
Yeah, he got a trip to Yark anyway.
Yeah.
This dude is a marketing genius.
February 22nd, trades the box truck for a recording contract with Metalworks in Ontario. there's
good
a
move.
City name
good move.
That is hard to pronounce. April 11th, trades that contract to Jody Nant for a year's rent in Phoenix, Arizona. So he's pretty much, he got a house now, but it's just rent.
Yeah.
2006, he trades that rent for one afternoon with Alice Cooper. This is an interesting transaction, this next one, because on May 26th, he trades the afternoon with Alice Cooper for a Kiss motorized snow globe. Arguably trading down, wouldn't you say?
Well, it must be worth quite a bit because Kiss memorabilia can be worth a shit ton of money.
This is true. June 2nd, trades the snow globe for a role in the film Donna on Demand, 2009 direct-to-video dark comedy film, and then in July 5, so started in July 14th of 2005, ends in July 5, 2006.
328 days.
Trades the movie role for a two-story farmhouse in Kipling, Saskatchewan.
And it's a cute house.
It's not a bad house. I wouldn't mind
it. It's better than my house.
We have no houses.
Exactly.
Fun. It's not fun. Well, you guys should get houses.
Thanks, baby.
You don't have a house either. Kevin has a house.
The world's largest paperclip installed at Bell Park in Kipling in 2007 is an ode to that transaction. It's a big red paperclip. He's just a guy who knew the art of the deal.
Yeah.
God damn, well, did he ever.
It looks like he was inspired to do it through the legend of the Straw Millionaire, that's how I felt like I knew about it, because it's a Japanese like fairy tale
yeah,
about a Buddhist folk tale about a poor man who becomes wealthy through a series of successive trades, starting with a single piece of straw. So yeah, that's like, why does it say why he did it? Like the actual, like this, what's his name? Kyle McDonald.
No clue.
Why did he do it?
He was a blogger. So
I'm on the website. I'm on the Red Paperclip website. The first entry just says, I'm the guy who traded a red paperclip for a house. I also do public speaking, have bought everything in a store and many other projects. This is a guy who just likes to do cool things.
So he does like
cool
publicity stunts kind of thing.
Store buyer. Yeah. I think this is, he bought everything in a store.
What was the store?
Let me go to the about section of another website called Store Buyout, presumably owned by the same guy.
Presumably.
Hey, Kyle here. One day, many moons ago, I came up with an idea. Let's walk into a store and buy everything. Everything's for sale, but nobody ever buys everything. What will happen if we do? I'd had a couple of brews at the time, and it seemed like the best idea ever.
Yep. What a menace.
And then there's this big story about how we bought everything in a store. This man's living the dream. This man's just coming up with cool ideas and just doing them.
Yeah.
He's just living his best life.
He's just living his best life.
$20 says he's got a podcast.
And getting houses and stores out of it.
He's got a blog. It's arguably
he's got a blog, so he's beaten us already. Yeah. DJ Dance Floor. You should look at redpaperclip.com because there's just a bunch of cool projects. And that's where I'm going to leave it.
We'll put redpaperclip.com in the show notes.
Show notes.
I'm going to have a look at it.
Please do.
I was going to have a look at it now, but then you wrapped up.
Well, thanks, yeah, James. And then I was like, Curtis, what have you got?
I have got a good article.
Great.
And that's the end.
All right. Well, now we have to vote.
We're going to vote for my good article?
Yeah, obviously.
All right, boys. I've got The Marri Man.
The Marri Man.
Sorry.
Or Stuart's Giant, as it is also known.
Ooh.
So. Marri, by the way, is spelled MARRREE. So,
just a second, I am going to roast Riley. Riley, are you currently buying laptops?
No.
During the
podcast? On your laptop?
On your current laptop?
Just browsing. This Kyle McDonald's got me excited.
What do you want to buy?
Do you want to trade?
What kind of laptop?
Yeah. Laptops for maybe better laptops?
Just, yeah.
I love it.
We could do anything.
Yeah, anything's possible.
We could do anything.
Go from a red paper clip to a house.
We're the millennial generation. We were told we can do anything as children. We can do it.
It's true.
Weren't we fucking lied to?
Yeah, it's true.
Yikes. Tell me about the Marri Man.
Yeah, go on.
It's a modern geoglyph. So you know what geoglyphs are?
Yeah.
Roll.
Okay, well, I'll explain what a geoglyph is really quickly. Have you ever seen in like Peru and that kind of thing, there's these big shapes kind of carved into the ground sort of thing?
Yeah.
So like there's...
the Nazca Lines?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's right. In Peru. So yeah, there's these big kind of like, and they were thought to be like kind of symbols and like words kind of to be readable by the Peruvian gods kind of thing. So the Marri Man is a similar thing. It is carved into the Finnis on a plateau in the Finnis Springs, sexy.
Ooh.
Man, 60 kilometers west of the township of Marri in central South Australia. So
it's here.
Yeah. I'm going to show you two boys a picture and we will put this picture again in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it is there.
G'day, mate.
Yeah.
Going to derail for just one second.
Oh, bless. What kind of laptop are you buying?
Google,
Yeah, found
look,
a laptop.
Guys, I just want you to have a look at this, the specs on this thing. I googled geoglyphs and there's a fucking Staryu coming up.
Ooh. What?
Staryu.
From what?
From Pokemon.
Oh, bad. Nerds will do anything if they get enough money.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, the Mari man appears to depict an indigenous Australian man hunting with a boomerang or a stick. It is just outside the 127 square kilometer Woomera prohibited area, which is a major Australian military and civil aerospace. So it's like, yeah, no fly zone kind of thing. The figure is 4.2 kilometers tall.
Dang.
Yeah, so pretty long, and a perimeter of 28 kilometers.
Jesus.
At its widest. Although it is the second largest geoglyph in the world.
Whoa.
Yeah. Arguably second to the Sajama lines in Bolivia. Its origin remains a mystery. So no one knows actually like who put it there.
Hmm.
Because it didn't, or the other ones, can, a lot of geoglyphs can be quite ancient. This one actually appeared for the first time in 1998.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Very recent.
Yeah.
So yeah, its origins remain a mystery with no one claiming responsibility for its creation, nor any eyewitnesses having been found, notwithstanding the scale of the operation required to form the outline on the plateau floor. The description Stewart's Giant was used in anonymous faxes sent to media as press releases in July 1998 in a reference to explorer John McDonnell Stewart, who was a Scottish explorer and one of the most accomplished of all Australia's inland explorers. So he explored and mapped a lot of Central Australia kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and it was discovered fortuitously by a charter pilot in an overflight on the 26th of June, 1998.
Wow.
So it's just some dude being Riley McNamara, captain of the skies, having a fly. And yeah, he looked down and went, I've not
what
seen
the fuck
that
is,
before.
That's, not man.
That's new.
My, that's not on my charts.
There's a naked man on the floor.
Yeah, so really interesting, but like it got a little bit contentious when shortly after its discovery, the site was closed by the South Australian government following legal action taken in late July by native title claimant. But as of 2010, flights are still allowed over the site as a native title fell under federal government jurisdiction.
Hmm.
So yeah, big dude.
Interesting.
Big geoglyph of a dude just out in, here's a another picture for you boys. And again,
oh, please.
Yeah, in the, that kind of like, that's a better representation of how freaking big it is.
Look at the size of that lad.
Yeah. It's
absolute unit.
Yeah.
I was so surprised when I read about this because like I've never heard of this.
Yeah, have right.
You guys haven't heard of
no,
it.
No,
yeah.
No. Especially if like the second biggest one. It's interesting that there's no known creator. Like there's a thing here about suggested creator.
Yeah.
I'm just glad they got the penis in there, really.
Oh yeah.
Well, it is a traditional representation and a lot of our Indigenous Australian art has
phallic
don't wear
elements.
Clothes. No. They don't wear clothes.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Suggested creator Bardius Goldberg, which is a great
name.
A great name.
Pinching that for D&D.
Nice.
A Northern Territory artist who died in 2002 and lived in Alice Springs has been suggested as the creator of the work. Goldberg, who was known to be interested in creating a work visible from space, refused to either confirm or deny if he had created the image in question.
Which sounds like the sort of thing you'd say
if
you were going to get in trouble for having done it. And had done it, like
just spitballing here.
Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Who's to say?
Yeah. So there was the reactions across the nation and in the media were a bit diverse. Much of the public and media reaction to the discovery of the figure was positive. The Advertiser, the state's only daily newspaper, called for the figure to be made permanent by excavating the outline down to white chalk layer in the
oh,
ground.
Wow.
Yeah. However, at the time of discovery, the air was part of a federal court legal matter about Indigenous Australian native title.
Sure.
So they were trying to decide who group of Aboriginal people were the traditional owners of the land, I believe.
Mm.
The area was claimed by both the, and I apologize to anybody if I butcher these names. It is a common tradition on this podcast. However, it's both the Arabuna people and the Dieri Mitha people who had been in dispute for several years about the specific region.
That land,
kind of thing. The Dieri Mitha publicly complained of harm and exploitation of the Dreamtime, calling for the image to be erased and the artist to be prosecuted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
As native title claimants, the Dieri Mitha took legal action to stop charter flights and vehicles visiting the site, prompting the state government to close the area to the public shortly after discovery. The Arabuna replied through a solicitor that the area covered points of archaeological interest and that the artist could be prosecuted.
Wow.
In May 2012, the federal court handed native title of the area to the Arabuna people. The artwork was called Environmental Vandalism by the former Environment Minister, Dorothy Cotts, and graffiti by the South Australian Chief of Aboriginal Affairs, David Ruthman.
Dang.
So yeah.
Hectic.
Whilst like a lot of the public and the media kind of thought it was a cool looking thing, there was some deepest kind of issues going on here that made it a bit iffy as to whether or not it kind of was a decent thing to do.
But then again,
graffiti, probably that's some pretty fucking big graffiti.
Yeah, right.
Graffiti's always been on the kind of grey area of the law.
I assume you wouldn't, like, as with all of these, like, large-scale things, you wouldn't know explicitly what it looks like from the ground, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, with this one, if it was in 1998 or whatever,
exactly.
Like, you might have an idea of it. But, like, some of the stuff, like the Nazca lines in Peru and, like, the ones in, like, the other one, the biggest ones, the Sajama or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, those were made, like, thousands of years ago.
Absolutely.
And, like, how do they know how it looks? Like,
insane.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, it's the same kind of, and I want to stress this. This will be the only time I ever link.
Don't do it.
Traditional Indigenous Australian art form and the swastika.
Okay.
However.
Well, all right. Here we go.
In the same sentence.
We're
however,
in it.
It's a similar thing as to like where they only, you remember how they only discovered that when a couple of weeks ago when I talked about the forest
the tree
swastika.
One.
Yeah.
The tree one. They only discovered it decades after the First World War,
because
it was the first time that kind of
aerial photography
could happen in West Germany, I believe. So yeah, and I guess it's a similar thing to this. Like this was it happened, and then discovered only by aerial. And yeah, so it's insane that like the artistic kind of skill require to like put these kind of things in the ground, and it's so amazing that like people thousands of years ago could do it.
Yeah, they also built the pyramids to line up with stars.
Exactly.
Like, true.
So there's all kinds of
ancient people were a lot cleverer.
Next level stuff going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Time to wrap up.
All right.
I'm just giving the wrap up single. Alrighty boys. Well, we need to
we need to pick a winner.
Oh, we do. We do and do. I was spacing out.
Curtis, would
I was
you like to go
how
first?
Do they do that?
Yeah. Would I like to go first? I will go first. Can we have a recap of what we did? I did the Mari Man, which I've just talked about. James, you did the...
I did the one red paperclip.
The one red paperclip.
Bone Wars.
I'm going to go with the red paperclip boy because that was I really like that. Mm. The success of trade and the skill it would take to like trade all that shit
right.
to get a house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Bone Wars.
Oh.
Oh, dear. Here we go again.
I like the Mari Man.
Oh, here we go.
Zane. We've had to bring you in a lot more since we stopped voting for ourselves. But I like it. It's good to hear from you every once in a while.
Well, that's nice.
Who's the wiener?
Who is the wiener?
It's Bone Wars.
Yeah.
You can't go past dinosaurs.
You always throw me for a left field whenever you pick one.
Really?
Yeah.
Nah, Bone Wars, dinosaurs.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I fucking hated your article.
That's okay.
I'm kidding. It's quite good. I just like the paperclip one better. Righty well. Well, there you go. Bone Wars for episode 23.
That's us.
23. Boys, we're getting close to the end
that we are.
Of the first season.
Can't wait.
I'm looking forward to doing that bracket where we decide the big winner of season one.
Indeed.
It's going to be a fun time.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Well, we got some social media.
That we do.
Talk to me about it, Jack.
I'll do it. So we're on Facebook, facebook.com/unfeaturedarticles. Instagram is Unfeatured Articles. Twitter is Unfeatured Pod. You can also find us where you're listening right now, whether it be iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. Feel free to share us around with your friends if you enjoy the show.
We greatly appreciate that. We know you might not want to, but do it for your pals, the boys.
Yes. Thank you, That's Not Canon, for hosting us on the network. What else can we find on That's Not Canon Productions, folks?
Oh, well, we can find your great podcast. You do another one, My Song Suck, with
That's
our
right.
dear friend, your Brisbane pop sensation, your man Alex Smith.
That's it.
What do you do on that one?
We talk about his old songs, the stuff he did when he was in high school, and also get some guests on who are local musicians. It's a good time. Check it out.
It's a great time. You can also find other podcasts like And Then They Fucked, where they read just terrible, terrible sexy fan fiction. every week.
Is it sexy? Yeah.
Sexy in air quotes.
Yeah, that one's hosted by our very own producer, Zane C. Weber, Julie Eisentrager, and sometimes Taylor Davidson. Am I correct? Yes, I'm correct. Hmm. You can also find Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, where they talk about all kinds of musicals with different people in the musical theatre industry in Brisbane.
You can also find all these on the That's Not Canon Productions website.
Yeah, go check them out.
There's a comprehensive list every there. One of them. I was just doing some of the
whole almost out, so.
We were
that's
do
not all of them on the wall, Riley. Like there's like full... 20.
I know. That's
you're doing like I'd seven mentioned... now. You've got a cat one coming out.
Yeah, there's a cat one coming out. Listen to that.
Okay.
You got any others going, Curtis, or you, no?
I have one planned, but I'm not talking about it yet.
Ooh, okay. It's a secret.
Dan and I still need to have a conversation.
Okay.
But in if you like theatre, keep listening.
A little teaser.
A little teaser for the boys and girls.
Anyway, thank you to Kevin MacLeod for Purgatory and Friends, which is our theme song. And as always, browse responsibly.
Bork, bork, hello.
Bork, bork, hi.
You know what you need to be doing? You need to be listening to the Floof and Papa podcast.
I'm Mel.
I'm Taylor. And we're going to talk about all things dogs.
Dog stories. Dog breeds.
Dog tips and tricks.
Dog puns.
Dog jokes.
Dog everything.
Out if you're not listening. Hit us up at the Floof and Papa podcast wherever you get your podcast.
Tune in.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.